Welcome to MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Soccer Player Development Podcast. Discover all the secrets, hints, and tips about soccer player development and soccer coaching from some of the leading figures in world soccer. Here's your host, Saul Isaacson-Hurst.
What's happening, guys? Welcome back to another show. This week we've got a top guest. It's Steve Salas. If you don't know Steve, Steve is one of the world leaders in psychological and mindset development in football and footballers. Steve works as a consultant with the English FA, the Scottish FA, works with many clubs and many footballers all around the world. Steve really is one of the top practitioners in his field in the world. So really great to have him on the show. Someone I'm proud to say is a friend of mine. Really good to chat about, you know, developing. I think that's, you know, one of the last frontiers of football. I mean, I talk about a lot in terms of individual development, in terms of technical side, but in terms of the psychological and the mindset development in footballers, but also coaches as well. That's an area I think we can all definitely keep developing and continuing. He's a really interesting guy, a published author as well, first book called Educating Football, a top read. Check it out if you haven't got it already. And a new book coming out called How Not to Be a Leadership Dickhead. It's a great title as well. What's interesting about Steve in his books, it's not just about developing the players, it's about developing yourself as well. And there's obviously a new book about being an effective leader and dealing with those things and working with other people as well. So yeah, a really interesting deep dive with Steve. And if you don't know as well, Steve also is one of the contributors on the Virtual Academy on the My Personal Football Coach app, the Next Gen Club. Steve delivers mindset sessions online. I deliver the technical. Glenn Hicks does some tactical analysis. Charlie Quigley, Southampton S&C coach, does some S&C sessions. And Chris Robinson has also been on the show, ex-Premier League scout at Chelsea FC, does some tips how to get scouted. So check out the Next Gen Club, the Virtual Academy on the My Personal Football Coach app. Well, and check out Steve's books as well. I'm going to put it all in the description. But without further ado, enjoy this one. It's top.
So welcome back to another Coaching Family special, My Personal Football Coach podcast, joined as ever by my good friend Glenn Hicks and very, very special guest, Steve Salas. Steve, before we say hello, just an introduction to yourself, someone who's one of the leaders in the football in terms of mindset development, has worked for many football clubs, the English FA, the Scottish FA, name a few, been on the High Performance podcast, got more Instagram followers than me, I don't know how that's happened, but he's a superstar within the industry. Steve, how you doing, mate?
Gentlemen, how are you? Looking forward to our chat tonight. Where am I at? I just tell stories for a living, gents, don't I? And just try, you know, me and Hicksie normally talk about sociology, really, Hicksie, don't we? You send me messages
well,
and
listen.
We just talk. We just talk about life, and I think that, you know, it's important for the listeners to know that my super strength is from inner London school teaching of 17 and a half years. So that's really where my skills come from, gents.
So yeah, big background in education, football as well. You work with some unbelievable clubs. I mean, you know, players that you've had, you know, Jude Bellingham to name, put a few. And then we started chatting about mindset development, something we haven't really talked about on the show before. And obviously, like, you know, I was thinking in terms of, you know, working individual players, working with groups. But I mean, it's just Steve, how did you go down that route? I mean, what was your, you know, your journey to get you to the stage of being one of the world leaders in this area of the game?
Well, I think firstly, when people call it mindset, I just call it teaching and learning. So it's just the ability to teach well and for players to learn well. My basis is all based around educational psychology. Fundamentally, I'm a coach at heart, and people see, you know, four corners, tech, tac, phys and psych, and they see them in isolation. But I talk to you, Sol, all the time about physical and technical and how they're heavily linked. And I think my work is based around just making football players better in every single department. I suppose I just don't do it on the grass like you two do. So, you know, I'm more strategic and more, you know, probably planning and piecing together a narrative for a player to go and smash their career. And I suppose that comes from conversations, which in the book I call them learning conversations, around how we can bring, I suppose, what you do on the grass to life with a deeper understanding. And, you know, I call it deep learning and shallow learning. And what I've noticed in pro football lads is there's loads of shallow learning going on and not enough meat to the bone with how we're working with elite athletes. So yeah, really, I call it mindset because my master's degree was in educational psychology, not sports psychology. And I can't call myself a sports psychologist. So, I've got to be quite careful with that one. So really the mindset thing came around because it's a play with words, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and also like it's a the buzzword, if you like, it's an area of interest and development, and probably one of the last sort of spheres of areas where there's been, like you say, a lack of understanding, a lack of attention, and lack of detail. Glenn, what's your thoughts in this area, and and also obviously, working with players in this sort of thing?
Yeah, no, I think I feel like the longer I've been coaching, Saul, in my 25th year now, 1999 I started. I know I was really young, I don't look old enough, but I feel like I spend more time on the social and the psych more than the technical and tactical, if I'm honest. And I've grown to become a little bit better at observing and listening and really trying to, because our characters and who we are and our behaviours leak out at times, doesn't it? Even when people are trying to hide it, it comes out, especially in football when the pressure's on and stuff. And I've actually chucked myself into listening more to people like Steve, or reading Steve's book, or not just Steve, but psychology books in general, and extended my own learning probably in the last 5 or 10 years. And I actually think it's some of the learning myself, Saul, that I'm actually most excited about, because I actually think it's the most valuable skill set to have as coaches, whether you're working with a 6-year-old that's a little bit upset because he's had a bad day at home, or a 26-year-old who's got problems at home with wife, kids, whatever else. I think it's normally the catalyst to good technical coaching. I don't think you can get the stuff right on the pitch if we haven't got the mindset stuff right and got people in a good place, a good kind of happy place or positive place. Do you know what I mean? So,
Yeah,
yeah,
I
that's
mean,
my initial thoughts.
so I mean, obviously, we want to utilize you, Steve, while we've got you here, and all the audience. I mean, so give us an example. When you do these, you do work with the Scottish FA, the English FA. What sort of stuff are you doing? What are the key, some of the key things you're saying now? I assume you're going in and working with the like elite coaches and stuff. What are the key sort of messages, the takeaways you want the coaches to have when you're talking to them?
I'm always creating new content and fresh content. I mean, my book was obviously written 6 years ago, so I haven't really changed that narrative. I think I start with a chapter called "The Singer, Not the Song." The song being everyone's content, right? So we've got subject knowledge, we've got subject knowledge base, and the singer is the person that brings it to life. And I've said this to you many times, gents, that the reason I fluke self-awareness, which is the key theme to my business model, is because the kids say, "Salish, your lessons ain't at the level." And they would swear at me and say, "Sir, you're not very good at your job." So you don't really want to hear that as a young teacher. But that was really the basis. Wow, I've got to liven up and I don't want to be the downgrade. So I think I meet lots of coaches who have got great songs, but they sometimes don't bring that song to life with a personality. I suppose I get a bit frustrated when people say, "Oh, I'm a motivational speaker." That winds me up a little bit because actually I've got lots of knowledge to relay to people. 25 years of, people know, you two know, I'm very research led actually. It's only because I love an opinion, I'm very strong in my opinions, that people see the opinion, but they don't always sometimes see the message behind the opinion. So I do challenge the listeners on the singer, not the song, and are you doing both? I think, the motivational bit, not in a rude way, it's not difficult to be positive, is it? It's not difficult to be kind. It's not difficult to put an arm around the player and say, "How are you?" Like, that's just standard stuff. And also not in a rude way. Like, we call it psychosocial. That's just common sense, isn't it? Like, to be kind. In school, we would just call that pastoral care. But again, that's not very glamorous. It's not a glamorous word. So there's a lot of things going on in education which are, in my opinion, more cutting edge than football. However, football in the last 10 years, with people like yourself, both of you, and other, great coaches in the game underneath the academy system as well as in the academy system, there's just been a greater level of pedagogy, hasn't there? There's more knowledge now. So it just means that when I go and watch, sixes, sevens, eight, and nines, those practitioners, or I'm waffling a bit, but I think if you start learning maths at 14, guess what? You're going to be rubbish at maths. So you need to start learning what you two teach as early as possible in order to create world-class talent. So, we call it early intervention in education. So the earlier we do things, the more chance we've got of adding value to life and performance.
So then, talking about those youngest players, your foundation phase, And if you've got like a room full of foundation coaches, grassroots, and you know, an academy football, what are the, some of the key things you're saying them in terms of, you know, things they can do, implement, you know, simple takeaways, you know, and obviously, you know, you talk about your first book, Educating Football, and people can obviously get that. What's some of the key things they want? You know, it's a great book, but what are some of the key takeaways that they can get on the grass here, right? Some simple things to implement in my sessions to improve that area. You know, they think is obviously like, you know, people are often thinking about the technical, the tactical, you know, maybe the psychological side is, or the social side maybe doesn't get as much attention. But a few simple things, or not simple things, a few key things that coaches can do to improve that and implement that on the training pitch.
Yeah, I've got bundles of things, fellas. I think it's important that the listener knows that my work is based heavily around critical thinking. Right. And I call it the black, the white and the grey. Right. And there's lots of black and white thinkers. There's lots of black and white in football and life, but there's also lots of grey. So I would challenge the listeners to think about where the grey moments are. If we apply this to football, I think there's a lot more black and white out of possession. You know, you don't get creative when you're marking a player at a corner. You get side on and you look at the ball and you look at the player. It's quite straightforward. But there's a lot of coaches that, now, when England, I'm going to sidetrack slightly, when England lost to Iceland, I think, in whatever year it was in the Euros, everyone said these players need psychological support. And I'm like, no, they don't. They need intellectual support. They need the ability to make better decisions. Now, you can call that psychology, but I again call that teaching and learning. Like, that's executing practices which are not so clean and clinical. And if we work on things that are clean and clinical in a game that is full of grey, then I don't think we're helping players. You know, if we link it to passing patterns, I like a passing pattern, but there's coaches out there that don't really do a lot else. And when the game happens and then these players are not able to execute, firstly, the decision and then to execute the physical components, you know, execute passes regularly, consistently, crosses, then we just get overcoached players, but in the wrong way. So I do think that, yeah, the prove, improve is something I'd really push the listeners on. You know, what's more important, to prove yourself or improve yourself? Types of questions and how we question and why we question. I want to challenge the listeners on when to press the less is more button and teach through your session design. You know, so there's lots of ways. And I think the final thing I'm going to say is to give listeners huge credit. What annoys me more than anything else is when, you know, the Twitter warriors say, you've got to coach like this and you've got to do that. And I'm like, well, my simple analogy, gents, is in my new book, 4-4, 5-3, 6-2, and 7-1. And it's the easiest analogy in the world. There's loads of ways to be successful, you know, in coaching, science, you know, teaching and learning, leadership. But people have just got to find their own eight, you know. They've got to find their own way to get to eight. And that would be the best way to give confidence to coaches, is just be 10 out of 10 of what you deliver. Because we can't mimic anyone else. We've just got to be, you know, aligned with our own super strengths. And, you know, for example, I can't do what you two do. I'm not good enough to do what you two do. I haven't got the knowledge. So I think that also applies to an expert hires an expert. If you don't know, you go and find someone that does, right?
Interesting. I mean, we'll come on to your new book in a minute. Let's focus then on the on thinking about, I mean, let's try and think, you know, how to utilize you then. I mean, obviously, you know, do you think there should be more people like yourself in academies, for example, you know, with that specialism? Is there a lack of, you know, attention to the psychological development in top rate academies, do you think?
Not in a position to judge, to be honest. I think, again, it goes back to the singer, not the song. Every single teacher on the planet has got a teaching degree. Hicksy knows about my rants about this. And every single teacher gets paid the same amount of money. Some change your life and some are objectively rubbish. And when people say to me, oh, how can you judge a teacher objectively when it's such a subjective opinion? For example, Glenn says, oh, I really like that teacher. And I say, I really don't like that teacher. Now, when I've been a vice principal and I've led on school, you know, improvement and the objectivity of staff performance, like, so for example, lesson observations, you know, formal and informal, we've got student feedback. We've got, you know, 80% of kids telling us that a teacher's ineffective. We've got parent feedback. We've got, this is really important, I share this, it's called contextual value added. So let's just pretend that Glenn is head of geography, right? And Sol, you're head of history, and you have exactly the same class, right? So you have the same class, but for a different subject. And Glenn adds more value to that class over a 2-year period than you do. Exactly the same kids, just different subjects. Those are the sorts of metrics that we use in education. So it just gives us real clarity. When I say there's underperformance in teachers, I can say it. That makes sense with actual metrics rather than just my opinion. So I think like my example is about subjective and objective. The final thing I'll talk about, subjective being opinion and objective being facts. Where I can help people in football clubs is a science to high performance, and just making sure everyone in the building is saying things that as objective as we can, so we're working with as much social science as well as we are, the literal word of science, sports science. So yeah, really, mate, I'm just the guy that ties it all in. It's a bit like, yeah, I'm just that guy really, that I can coach but choose not to, can do that, but I just want to make sure that all the departments are working cohesively to help the players.
So when you do go into these clubs or these federations, can you give us an idea of something, is there some of the ideas of some of the things you can tweak relatively easily, a little tip to say, in terms of what the coach is delivering or their language or the curriculum or anything like that? I mean, obviously you don't want to give away all
Yeah,
the
so yeah.
secrets.
No, it's all right. I don't mind sharing. It's great. I think I was sitting in the car the other week. I obviously worked with the UEFA for the Scottish Pro license, and we had th a 3 great days with West Ham, Tottenham, and Brentford. And it was just great to listening to three, coaches living it. I also think I reflected on that, and I was thinking about literacy. Well, how's literacy got to do with coaching? And it's got everything to do with coaching. So if we break literacy down into speaking, listening, reading, writing, and communication, and great coaches speak well, right? They have words. And if we apply this to the man on the street, the reason the man or the woman on the street punches someone on the nose is because they haven't got any words to articulate how they feel when they're angry, right? So we need words. Children need words and adults need words to be able to articulate ourselves under pressure. So, literacy is something I've implemented, and obviously my leadership acumen's pretty hardcore in terms of, talking about servant leadership, flat hierarchies, talking about strategy and operation and what that looks like, and then the evidence and impact models. And the evidence and impact model sounds quite posh, but really it's just, evidence in what you're doing in terms of the narrative for the learning journey for players, and making sure that we, the IDPs are rigorous, meat to the bone, lads, really.
Interesting. And what would you say, like, for example, grassroots coaches, those guys who've got their players once a week for an hour? I mean,
Yeah.
some tips for those guys who are putting in that hard graft.
Well, tip number one, no bus queues at all costs. So if no one's heard of the term bus queue, it's people queuing up to note my sarcasm, fail at something, to then have another go to fail at it. Like, that isn't coaching. So on the UEFA C license, I talked about something called the step process. So that'd be great for grassroots. And step means space, time, equipment, people. So, how much space you got, half a pitch, third of a pitch, full pitch if you're lucky. How much time in the week do you have? Hour, 2 hours. What equipment have you got? And then the people bit is the ratios bit. And I think all three of us will agree, when we started coaching, we would go from like ones to twos to fives to nines. And, it wouldn't flow very well. But with experience, you learn that your ratios are really important, aren't they? Right. And I suppose that, you want to go from threes to sixes to nines and play a 3v3v3. Or, if you've got nine, that would be a sensible thing to do, wouldn't it? So I think, yeah, the people bit is an important aspect. And the final thing I give football coaches a bit of stick about is when you're teaching PE in a school, you haven't got a clue how many kids you got, so you're making your ratios up on the spot. Whereas professional coaches know exactly how many players they got an hour and a half before training. So I'm not in a rude way. It's not difficult to plan a session when you know your exact numbers, is it? So again, all of these lads, you're living this stuff. All of these nuances of what we've lived, I think. You've just got to do the practice, haven't you? You've just got to do the hours.
Glenn, anything?
Now, I wanted to pounce on the grey area stuff. You said with the psychology in the grey area, Salis, do you feel like a lot of what you perceive as the best coaching probably happens in that grey area as well? Do you know what I mean? Like, whether it's black or white, or like a messy session. Everyone wants the cones to look in place and everything, 2 + 2 ways it's 4, but that's not football. We know that's not football. We've only got to look at recent games and know that that's not football. Can you marry up the two with the psychological grey areas that you're really aware of? Can you see that in coaching as well, about where the magic's taking place, as it were? Do you know where people say, is it black and white? Can you relate that to like the grey area of coaching as well?
Yeah, of course I can. I can do it really easily. I mean, at first team level, so I've now been an assistant in the Championship, in League One and League Two. So I've worked with, you know, managers at that level. And my job as one of their assistants is to tell them the truth, right? And it doesn't matter how many times I tell managers, they're not playing anymore. And they're standing on the side. You know, Cardiff, we played Swansea. We got whacked 4-0 by a Russell Martin team. As we know, that's not unusual because his football's incredible. We can't hear a thing because there's 28,000 in the ground. And the management team on the day were trying to relay information, which is partly subjective because you're not watching, you're not in the moment. You're not on the pitch as a coach. So that's the first thing. It's like reminding coaches you're not playing anymore. So you think you can see things, but you can't really. So I think like the grey bit comes with trusting players. So yes, we're going to play with a structure, but that genius, that final third, that creativity, particularly, I'm waffling a bit, but let's apply this in two sections. Firstly, to prove, which is 3-point football at first team level. And then I think we'll bring it back to youth team level, which is the improve part, right? Which is the bit where we can really process on mistakes. If we focus at first team level for the moment, like reminding coaches that there's so much grey on the pitch, reminding coaches that there could be 3 ways to score a goal here, right? It could be the 4-4, you going for the 5-3, and you're coming in at half time and you're battering players. Well, actually, well that's not going to add any value because you're asking them to be creative, but actually then you're stifling creativity with your black and white thinking, right? So I think that's section one. Section two, in terms of youth football and the Sunday League manager, There's too many, sorry to say it, strange coaches in the world that are obsessed with winning games of football, right? And if we look at an under-14 game of football, which is the middle part of growth for a boy, lads, anyone can bang the ball down the middle of the pitch to the big kid, yeah, and win 5-0, like. But not anyone can get players to play out and take risks and learn to fail and embrace failure. And then we've even got the oxymoron of the parents and their lenses and all their chimps coming out. You know, it is very complex, but I do think the average Sunday League manager could make their life a lot easier if they aligned, you know, the parent, the kid and the club. I don't think that happens very well.
Interesting. So speaking about that, Steve, I mean, you've worked at, they say, Championship, League One, League Two. How do managers effectively utilise you in that elite team environment, coaches, head coaches?
Great question. The best ones, honestly, well, in fact, all of them, let me get on with it. I'm pretty lucky. Like, Morrow's Ledge, just what are you doing? Let me get this. All of them, yeah, I'm pretty lucky. All of them just let me crack on. Like, none of them ever. I'm nightmare in it because I've just always doing something. So, you know, I'll give you an example today. So Sutton United, we're second bottom of the Football League, and we've proved since January when we went in that we are 7th in the form table. But at the weekend, we pretty much got relegated, right? We're not statistically relegated yet because we've got to go MK Dons at the weekend and try and turn the goal difference around. So I just spent all morning printing off the actual form table of the last 12 games, which says we're 7th. But reality is we're still going down. And the reason I did it is because I just wanted to have a really positive week at work with a group of players that have tried really hard and create perspective. And when I mean perspective, I also mean objectivity. The facts are, last 12 games, we are 7th in the league. And so what we're supposed to do, like batter them for a week and be horrible for them for a week and be really moody for a week like that. That's just not where I'm at. And I think going back to my school teaching days where I worked, I think it's important the listeners know, I worked in four failing schools in Greenwich and Lewisham. Football clubs are the easiest place I've ever been. We've only got 30 players. I've come from 2,800 kids, guys, that I don't hand pick. And in football, hands pick every player and then moans about them. Like, that's just mad, isn't it? So I just think, like, giving love, giving knowledge, providing objectivity in my work. The managers literally let me crack on. So I said tomorrow last week about team selection. And I said, look, I'm going to give you one bit of advice about team selection, and then I'm going to leave you alone for the rest of the week because I also know when to make sure that the manager's got as little noise as possible. So a lot of my work is also knowing when to press the less is more button for the manager. You know, I meet the players every week. We have team meetings. I do lots of things in the building. Staff CPD. I've given a staff leadership matrix, you know, so I'm pretty much in there just helping every single person in the building. Do you know what I mean?
What does that look like? I mean, what's your typical week like though? I mean, talk about how do you help? Are you having individual meetings? You're doing stuff with the groups, with the team, with the coach? I mean, I'm interested to know how does that look in practice?
Yeah, well, today I had two meetings with players over breakfast, so it's not like sitting in a white room. And you know, I've told the players strategically if they want to speak to me, they're not allowed to ad lib it on the day within reason. So I'm trying to get players to be more strategic. They have to text me the night before, so I don't get this off the cuff people at my door. So I'm trying to get players to be think, you know, not in a rude way to football players. I don't think outside the box very often, and it's very instinctive. So if player wants to see me that badly, it's like a doctor's appointment. You've got to book me in the diary because I'm a busy man in the football club, so I've got things to do. Right. So that's the first thing. So I've met two players this morning. Went out to training. Basically, cuddle every player. Tell them they're 10 foot tall. Tell them they're amazing. Have a bit of a giggle with them. You know, punch them in the ribs, and really just be a PE teacher, really. And, you know, honestly, it's today was a good day because I was out on the grass, and I'm not always out on the grass. Thursday, I've got a team meeting with the lads for an hour. We do something called a rag rating, a red, amber, green on our KPIs, and we just follow the same KPIs every week, and we just do a review on the game. And so I'll tell you what those are. I don't mind sharing with you, you know, the dark arts of football. We've got stay tidy. And by the way, I've created these. Tomorrow just lets me crack on with this stuff. So we've got stay tidy. We've got runs in behinds. We've got standards, behaviours, attitude towards each other, and the process. This is a cute one. We've got influence the ref, which I hate, but at that level, it's our careers. So can we influence the ref? And when I mean influence, don't mean swear. I don't mean get aggressive. I mean communicate with the referee so we can manage the game better. We've gone from no pens before our tenure to four pens in 20 games. So I'm not saying that is directly influenced, but I know through professional football that is another facet to how you win games of football, whether we like it or not. And I feel quite guilty because obviously I'm a youth developer, so I have to change my hat. But I also have to remember that if Sutton get relegated, 10 of our academy staff are losing their job, right? So I've also got to be mindful of winning. What else have we got on our ag rating? It's just a matrix where the players just do a green, amber, red of every single game, and we have discussions about it. So we don't really change the narrative. Does that make sense? It's just consistent.
What about on match day, on game day, when you're, you know, in the intensity
Game
of the
day.
cauldron of c competitive cauldron of the game?
Yeah, do you know what? Well, firstly, I go and sit in the stand first half because I can't handle the bench. Bench just does my head in. All of them know that. Every club I've worked at, I don't want to be on the bench listening to you lot just talk nonsense, even though I love them all. So I'll watch in the stand. I will do three things in possession and three things out of possession, which I think can add value. The reason I sit in the stand is because I want to be objective and I don't want the emotion getting in the way of my decisions. Second half, I normally go down. Second half, I was on the bench Saturday. Sometimes I'll go down at 60. Sometimes I'll stay there depending on what I think, you know, marginal gains. Away games, obviously we have team meetings and stuff Friday nights and Saturday mornings. So they're all pretty black and white meetings, you know, what we're going to do with and without the balls. They're quite standard. But really, really, gents, on match day, I think less is more again. Like, so let me apply prove improve. All the improving happens Monday to Friday, and then Saturday's prove day, isn't it? So we don't really say a lot. Like, I like a key word for every player. I will give you this one. So every player, because I'm big on language, every player, I will look at them and I go, what am I going to say? And Josh Coley, I go, catalyst. Because I think if one of our players, Josh Coley, goes and gets a regain early doors, I think he gets everyone going. I'll say to Ollie Sanderson on loan from Fulham, I'll say aggressive, right? So, you know, I'll say to centre forward, Harry, I'll say stay tidy. So there's just, because it's the overload, isn't it, match day? But I don't change my narrative because I pretty much know with my coaching head on what players need to do to get their 7.5 out of 10. I just think if they get that, you know, Josh Coley, he's a winger, by the way, and he goes and runs around and gets the ball back, I know the whole team go wallop. So I've just said, you're the catalyst. And he, bless him, he said to me, what's that mean? And I taught him what the word means. So just small things like that, lads. Nothing, you know, I'm just an addition. I'm only another cog in the wheel. I'm not, you know, the god of football. I just, on my journey, trying to out footballers and coaches win games.
So moving on to your second book. Is this your second book? Is that your second book? Educating Football, is that your first book? Sorry, Steve. I know you're an
Yeah,
illustrious
yeah, yeah. I'm
author.
not. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, knocking them out.
Yeah.
But so just say how not to be a leadership dickhead. So you know that's a title you want. Is that right? That's just rolls
Well,
off the tongue that
Hixie,
one,
what are
doesn't
your thoughts on the title? Yeah.
I think it's bloody brilliant, mate. I've pre-ordered it. I think it's yeah. Does what it says on the tin, as they say, doesn't it?
And build a high performance team, obviously. So yeah, it's great. It's a great title.
Yeah, I mean, like all these things, with what we all learn in PR when you have a business, it can't have a
Priorities,
vanilla
yeah.
title because no one cares either way.
That's right, mate.
So, like the educating football thing, if you read the book, most people,
It's not
you know,
about
of course it's about football, but really it's about educational science, isn't it? So, I've taken three or four chapters from that book and picked up and dunked it into this book anyway. So, I do think, like, you know, where am I at with it? Like, I live and breathe leadership. I live and breathe conversations around good leadership and flawed leadership. And having worked under some leaders that were bullies, that was my initial passion to educate, really. I'll give you an example. I've got two little sisters, lads. One's 27 and one's 21. And my 27-year-old sister, who I love dearly, is a school teacher in Bradford. She's a maths teacher. And she's had some good and bad leaders already, and I can sort of see her working out the narrative of the modern work world. And I want someone like her to be more informed earlier on their work journey about the pitfalls of some leaders. And so I'm just going to give you a chapter called The Line of Pride. Okay? And you won't have ever heard of it anywhere because I make these things up in the car and I write about them. But sometimes in life, in love, friendships, relationships, or work, because of poor practice, your line gets moved, right? And you might lose a bit of confidence sometimes, or you might be vulnerable because of a personal issue, and therefore you get treated differently and you accept that poor treatment, right? And I've been there, and I just want a young person or an old person to read it and go, hold on a sec, my line of pride's being moved here. I know what's right, and I know what's wrong. And so I think the book I'm really excited about, it's 25 years of my lived experiences with a theoretical research-based angle. So I've basically put every single business model of my, sorry, every single facet of my business into the book. So it's 25, yeah, it's 25 years of my intellectual property, to be honest. So, you know, it really will be, it's 9.99. It really will be a golden nugget of know-how, I hope. You know, I talk about narcissism, I talk about sociopaths, I talk about flat hierarchy, servant leadership, I talk about high-performing teams, Bruce Tuckman model, I talk about forming, storming, norming and performing, conflict, communication, literacy, you know. I'm really excited about it, and I've really enjoyed writing it because lighting for me, guys, is quite therapeutic. I enjoy that, you know. And I'm just looking forward to what I'm looking forward to is people like yourself reading it and going, Salis, that's really helped me. Or Hixie calling me and going, what did you mean by that? You
Yeah, it's
know, so
funny.
I think,
Go on, mate.
yeah.
Sorry.
No, you go, go on.
Yeah, so I mean, I immediately, because again, when we first chatted and you sent me the title of that book, I immediately thought about my experiences in academy football, particularly, and having some amazing line managers, joint managers, and having some real stinkers. I'm not being funny. Like, and how interesting it was. Like, how some people's personalities change when they became, for example, phase lead or stuff like that, and some people were just really difficult to manage, and some people were like really inspirational, and I felt like I'd, run through the gates of hell for them. But I mean, it's interesting that, isn't it? I suppose it's like you haven't had that experience, and suddenly you're put in a position where you're now managing people. And because a lot of people just go into football and suddenly they become managers of the people, and they haven't had that experience before, and they don't necessarily know how to manage it or those emotions and stuff like that. I mean, I suppose this is what, a lot of what they can cover in the book. But I mean, that's. I mean, that's for me. I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah, Hixie, what are your thoughts on your what types of leaders have you had in your lifetime?
Bit of everything, mate. And I would say about reading a book, because I have read your book, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not just saying it because you're here. I still use it as like a go-to as well. And the reason is because once I got through the first few chapters, I figured out that I was learning from a teaching perspective as well, because I'm not qualified in any way really as a teacher. I've done like petals and whatever, but I haven't gone the uni route as a teacher. I've had to learn through coaching on the grass and with people, and I kind of still use it as a go-to reference book as well, Salis. And I think when we read books, we all tend to do that, don't we? We listen to what's being read written in a book, and we put it into context. Like Saul said there, you actually straight away go to the ones that you believe was, oh, he was a bit of a dickhead, or actually, do you know what, I would have run through walls for that person. And I think the biggest thing to take from it is what are we going to take from that book to just make us better at what we're doing in our own leadership as
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
and like just not basically just not be that dickhead as well. Salis, I've got a question for you though as well. We talk about super strengths a lot. I've seen the work you do with the kids, obviously, and stuff. What would you say? Because from where I'm looking, I think it's quite remarkable that you're putting 25 years of your whole intellectual property. You're either going to put yourself out of business or you're going to set wildfires, and I believe it will be that one. You'll ignite a lot, but. What would you say your two or three super strengths are? Would you say one of them is that you're how open you are and how sharing you are as a leader and as a developer? I would be interested to know that. What would you nail yours down
That's
as?
a really humbling question. I think the first thing is just genuine subject knowledge in my field. Like I've got the applied and the theory, haven't I? So I have lived it, but like, I think my master's degree changed my life, guys. I have to share that. Like, I did my master's at 33. Sometimes uni can be a bit tick box and you get it to get the qualification. But I told you, as I said, Glenn, in the book, like metacognition, it changed my life. And when the professor said to me, how do you know that you know something? And I just sat there with a load of vice principals going, oh my God, that is an unbelievable question. And then an hour later, he said, what if your knowing is wrong, but you've always done it like that? It made me reflect on everything that I do. And then because I'm a lunatic, then I read about epistemology. Because so what I can do, guys, is talk about this posh stuff, but then tie it in with genuine research. And I think that's my super strength, Glenn. Particularly in the corporate world, I'm not just getting repeat business because I'm just making this stuff up. I'm getting repeat business because this is all tied in with a million methodologies, and I've just gone, wallet, this is the research in my business model. So epistemology means the study of knowledge. Right? Now, we didn't learn about that. I just read that and then it linked to metacognition. How do I know that I know? I know that I know because I've researched it, I can teach it, I can coach it, I failed at it, blah, blah. Epistemology then is the study of knowledge. Now, if we look at football, like, let's apply this. Sven Goran Eriksson, who we all love, played 4-4-2. So let's just look at that was the knowledge base. Are you telling me that he couldn't fit in Gerrard, Scholes and Lampard into a freer midfield? Right? So there's something in his blind spot. Does that make sense? As there was in lots of other football managers for many decades in this country, because I'm now going to tie this into another posh word. Can you two remember what agnotology means?
No.
Right. Agnotology is power. Agnotology means the study of cultural ignorance. Right. So there was culturally ignorant bankers, teachers, football coaches. So unless we change the narrative of knowledge for 2024, most experts are experts on an old version of the world, lads. Yeah, they're experts on old football methodologies. So unless we as experts move our computer and update our computer, which is our brain, a metaphor, we're going to be stuck in the 1980s with our coaching methods. But that then links to epistemology because it says, how do I know that I know? Well, I used to know this, but I now know that because it's actually changed. And I'm going to apply this to education, lads. This is a really sad story. Children with special educational needs used to get sent to mental health institutions because the knowledge of that expert was actually wrong. And this is where, sorry to swear, my fucking passion comes in. What are we all doing now that in 25 years' time you're going to go, Salish, remember when we did that? Oh my God. Sold, remember when we did that? Oh my God, what were we doing? Right? And so, yeah, when you ask me that, what's my super strength? My super strength is without a doubt knowledge of stuff. Yeah, without a doubt. And how that creates a more self-aware workplace. And that self-awareness then creates higher emotional intelligence. And that then means we can say, Glenn, I don't know that. Can you please help me with that? Does that make sense? Then we grow genuine friendships because we've just got this alignment in a building of genuine objectivity.
But try not to be an ultra-crepidarian, isn't that right, mate?
There we go. So
See,
tell the audience what an ultra-crepidarian is.
I'll be honest. Yeah, it's someone that talks about a subject and pretending to be an expert, and they don't have the knowledge on it really, putting on a bit of a show. Am I right? Have I nailed that right or not?
Yeah, so an ultra-crepidarian is someone that has an opinion on something they
And they've
know
got know
nothing
nothing
about.
about. Yeah. But again, so I'll be honest with you. Since reading bits on the book, you do stop to question yourself. Say, hang on a minute, I need to learn more about that. Whether it's nutrition, like who am I to lecture someone if I ain't got, do you know what I mean? And you just got to get a bit more inquiring. And I think that's a duty of us as coaches, isn't it? So whether it's the social stuff we talk about, Salis, when we have chats about the whether it's social science, call it what you like, psychology, mindset. I just think it's our duty as coaches to really just be more interested in this stuff. And you can't be an expert at everything, but what's that saying about you can be, you know, everything about something and something about everything. And it's really, really important, I think. Yeah, it's just my view on that, really.
So who'd you say this book is for, Steve?
It's for any aspiring leader. It's for any football coach. It's for anyone in the world of work. Like, pay chapter one. You could read chapter one in 2.5 minutes and not have to read anything in the book ever again and be a better leader. Right? And it's 38 how not to leads. And it just says, don't. And at the end, it says, with a bit of sarcasm, don't say don't. Problem should. You know? And you can read it. It's a bit of humour. You know, I've been a bit braver. It's got a couple of F-bombs in there and whatever. But I'm really excited. I mean, you two have both been invited to the book launch. So I'm really excited
Excited about that.
for it to help people. You know, I'm excited for people to go, wow. You know, like something called the Peter Principle. We've just, you know, you lot talk about it, but I'm the guy that can probably apply the post theory to it. So the Peter Principle is where someone gets promoted and they keep getting promoted and they eventually get promoted to a genuine level of incompetence. Right, so it's a bit like a classroom teacher in a school, unbelievable in the classroom. They gum ahead of head of department and they can't lead a group of people. Right, so football coaches are no different, right? They're great on the grass, but you get them in front of, you know, leading a team at first team level or leading a group of lead phase coaches and they can't lead. So there we go, there's another nugget called the Peter Principle.
So for coaches there, obviously, look, they can get your educating football book. So that's a great first start. And then this the new book coming out. So when tell everyone when the release date is.
Yeah, release date's June 6th. So yeah, it'd be on Amazon and yeah, I think all good bookstores. I think my publicist said she's going to try and get it in Smiths in Gatwick, which would be quite cool, won't it?
There you go. Perfect. And just one takeaway bit of advice for all coaches out there or parents, you know, involved in the game.
Parents keep perspective at all costs. That's really, really important. Try and be objective with your kids. Give them a RAG rating, technical, tactical, physical, and psychological, and ask them questions which are more specific on the drive in the car on the way home, which are more specific to those four corners rather than, oh, how did you play today? And then for coaches, just be open-minded and put your ego in the bin and learn from other people and be obsessed with your song and the knowledge, but be the singer too, be the singer, bring your knowledge to life with love and passion and humor and don't take yourself too seriously, I suppose.
Salis, top draw, mate. Much appreciated. Cheers for that.
Pleasure, gents. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to the MyPersonalFootballCoach.com Soccer Player Development Podcast. MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Dynamic Ball Mastery Program is the world's leading online individual technical training program, proven and developed at the highest level in the English Premier League. Sign up now to train like the pros and take your game to the next level. Master the ball, master the game.